If one was to document all the instances when altcoin or shitcoin proponents have pointed out to Bitcoin's slowness, an entire encyclopedia of misleading marketing schemes from the blockchain industry could be written. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What's up? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. We have a great read today, per usual, because we don't do any of the bad ones. We only do the great ones. This one's from, I actually don't think I've read one from Bitcoin Takeover before, even though I've actually read a lot of this blog or this website, whatever you want to call it. It's bitcoin-takeover.com. And we've read the author, I'm sure you know, Vlad Kostya, and this is his piece on Bitcoin Takeover, and it is titled, Bitcoin is not slow, it's highly secure. And this is a really important concept that so many people do not understand, and it's one that I feel makes a lot of sense to hit it over and over and over again from different perspectives. And we have hit it before on the show, but there are still so many people who do not understand this concept. So, let's put it in a slightly different light and hit it again. And this is a really great piece to do so. A huge thank you to our sponsor, Hexa Wallet. Just added a couple of new contacts in the last couple of days. Thank you guys for taking me up on this. And they've got a couple of features coming, pretty soon as they get out of beta. Any feedback or whatever that you can give, feel free to send it my way. I've been talking with the guys over there and they want this to be the best wallet for noobs that you can get. So again, if you want to be a contact or want me to be a part of your backup, if you download Hexa Wallet, hit me up in DMs. They are open. I'm more than happy to help. With that, let's go ahead and get into today's read, again from Bitcoin Takeover, and by Vlad Kostya, and it's titled, Bitcoin is not slow, it's highly secure. When critics say that Bitcoin is, quote, slow, it's good to remind them that security is much more important in decentralized networks. This article explains how and why. Poorly informed or disingenuous critics often point out to Bitcoin's, quote, slow transaction validation time. Yet a truly decentralized and global currency needs to have a rigorous verification process, which allows all nodes to validate and broadcast transactions. The 10-minute block time is not just some cautious threshold that a concerned creator has added to an obsolete technology in an era where internet speeds were slower. It's a reasonable amount of time which allows everybody to be in sync with the rest of the network, from the miners who harness solar energy in the middle of the desert to the metropolitan node operators. All participants should have the capacity to download and validate roughly 1 megabyte every 10 minutes. Regardless of what shitcoin marketers will tell you, Bitcoin's conservative monetary emission is nothing like the speed limit of a Ford Model T, which shakes when driven on bumpy roads. It's not slow. It's just secure enough to avoid double spins and guarantee that no hidden inflation occurs. One of the earliest and most famous cases of Bitcoin criticism belongs to Daniel Larimer. In 2010, he complained about the 10-minute block time and suggested that payment validation should be, quote, as fast as swiping a credit card. Satoshi Nakamoto himself went on to argue in favor of a decentralized system in which users validate their own transactions, then dropped his famous, quote, if you don't believe me or don't get it, I don't have time to try to convince you. Sorry. Bitcoin security versus banks. Speaking of transaction validations that happen as quickly as swiping a credit card, the concept of waiting roughly 10 minutes for the next block appears to be weird for people who come from traditional finance. In their minds, the currency of the internet should transfer instantly and confirm just as fast as their PayPal transfers. This type of expectation is unrealistic in relation to decentralization. In order for a bank settlement to happen within seconds, there is a lot of institutional trust involved. The banks must trust each other, and the transacting parties are vetted by an intricate institutional setup that prevents double spends. If Alice sends $1,000 to Bob, then the confirmation happens instantly thanks to institutional agreements between their banks. The system relies on trust and is regulated by laws. Once confirmed, money transfer is not permanent and can be reversed or frozen at any time. Also, the actual settlement may take a very long time to happen, as banks keep tabs on each other and only move physical money when they think it's necessary. Twitter thread by Nick Szabo. Shallow safety versus deep safety. Shallow, estimated from volatility, assumes nothing goes wrong at lower layers of the protocol stack. Deep, what happens to your assets upon underlying failures? Example, how would your digitally centralized assets fare against sanctions or cyber war? Digitally centralized assets have poor, deep safety. They were designed in and only work in a legally stable environment. Real estate and gold have deeper safety, assuming strong local security. Trust-minimized Bitcoin uses computer science to achieve unprecedentedly deep safety. Digital centralization has made it possible for the first time in history for authorities to routinely extract haircuts and negative interest. Some countries in Europe have already used these techniques against digitally centralized cash balances. At the behest of political activists, digitally centralized financial services have frozen accounts and cut off access to a wide variety of people based on their political views. In a deep or prolonged recession, attacks by technocratic authorities and political activists against digitally centralized assets will increase in volume and scope. Other forms of political or legal instability could also lower the safety of digitally centralized assets. One can think of shallow safety as the technical analysis of safety based on technical factors such as price volatility. Deep safety is a fundamental analysis of the underlying technological, political, and legal environments which actually control the assets. Deep safety varies greatly between different people and organizations. Risks to digitally centralized property vary greatly between different people and organizations and their different political and legal environments. Price movements don't tell you much about your particular safety. End thread. Bitcoin is completely different in its design and requires specific security to preserve its qualities. First of all, Bitcoin is decentralized. This means that no central party has more authority than the other, and decisions are made with a consensus between nodes. Secondly, confirmed transactions are final and irreversible. Attacking the network to reverse a transaction after one confirmation took place costs as much as 50 Coinbases, 312.5 Bitcoin after the 2020 halving. So the financial incentives are stacked against this type of action. Using the same hash power to mine Bitcoins generates a greater profit. Thirdly, Bitcoins are scarce, and the Bitcoin network secures the emission at all times. If banks can get bailed out if they fail, and new money can be printed by central banks to tax the wealthy through inflation, then Bitcoin operates outside these political decisions. These concepts are hard to grasp by people who've spent most of their professional lives appealing to an authority that has decisive powers to make changes. But in Bitcoin, you can't appeal to a government or bank to revert a payment, and you need proper security to make sure that transactions follow the rules. Yet it seems like not even centralized exchange owners like Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao, or CZ, who have been around the Bitcoin space for a while, seem to understand how the network works. So there's no shame in trying to learn and understand. Bitcoin security versus, quote, fast shitcoins. If one was to document all the instances when altcoin or shitcoin proponents have pointed out to Bitcoin's slowness, an entire encyclopedia of misleading marketing schemes from the blockchain industry could be written. Every cryptocurrency derived from Bitcoin, with the exception of contentious forks that tried to identify as the real Bitcoin, has reduced the block time. Litecoin, created in 2011, releases new blocks every roughly 2.5 minutes. Dogecoin, created in 2013, generates a new block every 1 minute. Ethereum, created in 2015, generates a new block every 15 to 20 seconds. Yet there are lots of projects whose marketing departments, a concept that's foreign to Bitcoin and any truly decentralized network, directly attack Bitcoin for being, quote, too slow. They'll say that they can handle thousands and millions of transactions per second. They can compete with Visa and MasterCard, and they enable decentralization for mainstream adoption, institutions, a better future, whatever buzzword a marketing department can invent. But the problem is that their definition of decentralization is very different. To many shitcoins, being decentralized only means lacking a central point of failure. Having a handful of nodes being operated by different actors is sometimes enough of a reason to engage in misleading comparisons with Bitcoin. They don't care as much about every user being sovereign and running a node to validate all transactions. They don't educate users to download the reference client to verify the coins they're receiving and increase their own privacy. It's also likely that they will find excuses about full nodes being wasteful, expensive to operate, and unnecessary in their revolutionary and decentralized network. One useful resource that will help you understand network security and transaction finality is howmanyconfs.com. Most of the time, these shitcoins target audiences that feel disillusioned by the legacy banking system. So they will highlight their quickness by comparing themselves to Visa, Western Union, or PayPal, and then drop the, quote, decentralized argument. If they also include hype words such as smart contracts, DeFi, AI, machine learning, and other terms that are popular in Silicon Valley, they might just attract the investments of clueless newcomers. But how decentralized and secure is a network that is worth a few billions, but can be attacked for less than $10,000 an hour? And what difference does it make if your shitcoin of choice receives a confirmation in 15 seconds if it takes 5 extra hours to be sure that it's as final as a Bitcoin transaction? Also note that the case described is that of Ethereum, which has a reasonable amount of hash power to secure it. In the case of Dash, you'd have to wait 8 days. If these networks don't improve their security with proper incentives, it's likely that the gap will widen in the future. Right now, the slow Bitcoin network is a lot faster if we consider security, which is the best metric for decentralized networks. And the 10-minute block time is just perfect to not discriminate between metropolitan broadband internet users and isolated individuals who use mesh antenna and have very slow connections. Everyone gets to be in sync with the network. Everyone is encouraged to run a full node and can do it for less than $200. And every transaction that gets included in a new block is properly verified against double spends and inflation. This, quote, Model T of cryptocurrencies actually turns out to be better according to the metrics that actually matter in decentralized networks. And for the scope of this analysis, only base layer transactions and security have been taken into consideration. The Lightning Network, Liquid, and other off-chain scaling solutions offer more privacy, speed, and scalability without minting new shitcoins. So the next time somebody says that shitcoin X is faster than Bitcoin, or claims that Bitcoin is slow, show them the criteria that truly count in a decentralized network. And when they claim to have invented the next Bitcoin, they better bring the network effect and security. Or else it's just a good idea that can very well be incorporated into the Bitcoin ecosystem as a sidechain. All right, and that closes Vlad Kostya's piece on Bitcoin-Takeover.com. Bitcoin is not slow. It is highly secure. And he's actually got a Bitcoin address down at the bottom with QR code. So I will have a link to this in the show notes if you want to go donate to support his writing and work and this article. And I definitely recommend checking it out, the Bitcoin Takeover website, the podcast, and everything that they do over here. There's a lot of great conversations, tutorials, articles, all that stuff. Just a ton of stuff on this website. All right, so let's take a quick break and hit our sponsor, and then I really want to dig into this piece and kind of the fundamental principles behind what Vlad is talking about here. For many of us in our own journeys, and particularly after finding Bitcoin, it becomes very clear how much school either never taught us or how many of those things were just wrong. That is where Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom comes in. There are so many great teachers in this set of courses and monthly live sessions even and forums to learn with others in the community. The number of courses here is just crazy, and they are still adding more. You can learn the truth of U.S. and Western history, about the history of political and economic thought over thousands of years, take a class on logic that teaches you how to think rather than what to think, and my personal favorite, a class that goes through the entirety of the traditional economics textbook, teaches it, and then explains where it is misleading or outright wrong, and exactly why. Liberty Classroom is the best place to learn the economics and history that public school never taught you, or that fed you nonsense about. Go to guyswan.com/liberty, and you will also help support this show. I've been a consumer of Liberty Classroom for a long time, and I know you guys will love it too. So Guy Swan, and that's Swan with two N's, guyswan.com/liberty. So I mentioned in yesterday's little section about Hexawallet that I sent my first batched transaction just on the fly the other day, and I gotta say it was just so cool to have something so I literally cannot believe that this is not something that is in every mobile wallet yet. I legitimately just kept, all I had to do was hit the add recipient button, and I scanned a new address, or I selected a new contact, or more specifically, I added my savings account, the multi-sig account that's built into the wallet, as well as a Lightning wallet that I scanned to get to my BTC Pay server, and then it sent one transaction. And I can go and look at it on the blockchain, and it is just one transaction to four different outputs, and I, you know, save money on fees at a time when fees are actually kind of high right now. There's pretty good congestion on the network. And that's just too cool. And every single Bitcoin wallet needs to take a page out of that book. They need to look at how Hexa is doing this and then copy it, because that's how it needs to be done. Don't forget to check out hexawallet.io and shoot them a thanks for supporting the show. You can also obviously just search them on the Google Play or Apple App Store. And of course, always my offer to be a contact or part of your backup, shoot me a DM. Okay, so this piece, the principle that I wanted to get at, and something we've talked about numerous times on this show from a couple of different perspectives. I'm really a big fan of Nick Carter's piece on this. Parker Lewis does a really good job. But over and over again, this cannot be stressed enough. Like Vlad said in this piece, is that if you wanted to gather up all of the altcoins and shitcoin marketing material that said, oh, we're faster than Bitcoin, you could literally write an encyclopedia, and it wouldn't be a small encyclopedia or an average-sized encyclopedia. It would be a massive, fat, small print, thin page encyclopedia. And they completely have lost the plot. What is the point of a confirmation if it doesn't mean anything? They hide behind the fact that a confirmation seems equivalent to another confirmation. So a confirmation on Bitcoin is obviously a confirmation on Ethereum, because I said confirmation both times. They are equal, and that is simply not the case. It is a fundamental, either a misunderstanding or an ignorance of how these things work or what it means to have a confirmation, or it's just disingenuous, it's just dishonesty. I think about 99% of the time it's ignorance. So I'm not really blaming people. Like, you know, if you don't, there's an endless number of things to learn, and, you know, noobs inherently come into this space and they learn from the couple of people who are dishonest, or the people who learned from the people who are dishonest. Somebody knows and they're lying, or just don't really care that the words they're using don't mean anything, because, you know, it helps them and they make millions of dollars off of it. And then the unfortunate noobs get tricked, and they turn around and spread the same thing, say the exact same thing in some Twitter argument, and don't really know how to defend it, but they certainly know the talking point. But Nick Carter has a really good piece breaking this down called "It's the Settlement Assurance is Stupid," which I didn't actually read that one because he has another one about, I can't remember the title of it, but it's something with settlement assurances, and it's on the same idea, just kind of from a different take. But the general idea is the same as Vlad is talking about here, is that this is about how well you know the transaction is done. What assurances do I have that the money I sent is in fact received, is in fact sent to that other person? And that is entirely dependent. It is entirely derivative of the security of the network. And that is the unbelievable power of Bitcoin. And that is why Bitcoin confirmations, that is why Bitcoin settlement and transactions are by orders of magnitude faster than everything else out there. Nothing can provide the assurances that Bitcoin does right now. And that's why it's worth hundreds of billions of dollars, and it will continue to be worth more and more. Simple example is, if we're talking about speed of quote-unquote confirmation, you can use a custodian. You can use a company or a payment service like Visa or MasterCard or Binance or Strike or whoever you want to use, just have them settle once a day or twice a day, and your settlement still is faster than every other altcoin out there. Not to mention that it has the highest assurances of any of them, but just necessarily it's faster. Why? Because some other institution is just saying confirmed, but that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything if it doesn't come with any assurances. So if we're talking about a network like some, yeah, I don't know, pick one of any of the thousands of altcoins that, and that's why Vlad actually has a chart in his thing about how many confs, and that's C-O-N-F-S, that's really hard to say so that you could tell exactly what it is, but it's for confirmations, C-O-N-F-S, howmanyconfs.com, and it compares the cost, the amount of energy going into the settlement assurances of each of these networks. And as soon as you get just five or six of them down the list, you're getting into the hundreds or thousands of times slower. Doesn't matter if it says, oh, check, we're done after 1 second, if it only takes $20 to turn it back around and undo it. And proof of stake coins don't have any cost. If you have a majority of the network, you are the network, essentially. It's not even decentralization of the network itself or of the validation. It's just a weak distribution of the authority of the network. And we actually see this with like the hostile takeover of not Tron, what was it? Steam did the guy who owns Tron, oh God, what's his name? I'm not gonna remember it right now, but that he bought Steam, and then and like some exchanges or whatever that he had either business connections with, or I think owned himself. I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but basically did a hostile takeover of the entire Steam network because there were so many of the Steam coin, which was a proof of stake coin, on exchanges. And he just like went to the two exchanges or three exchanges that had the top number of coins that were out there, and then just like was like, all right, well, we're just gonna vote this way and this is gonna be the network now, and all of the thousands of light clients or whatever on Steam just listen, like they just go with it. So it doesn't matter if like that's the whole thing, is that like people position proof of stake as if it's some scaling solution, but it still doesn't matter if you're not running a validating node. It doesn't mean anything. It's actually worse than having proof of work at that same distribution. Proof of stake is way worse, especially if you think it's a scaling solution, because then you're going to essentially make sure that there are no validating nodes. So there's nothing to defend against an essentially a hostile takeover of the majority vote. It's still entirely reliant on the number of validating nodes. So if you think this means, you know, you can get gigabyte blocks, well, then you just know that you have no validating nodes, and whoever has the most stake is essentially the dictator of the network. You essentially can't have a situation like the user-activated soft fork, where, you know, 80%, 90% of the miners say, we're going to change the network because of this or in this direction, and all of the nodes, all of the users, all of the community say, go ahead. We are going to stay right here, and we are going to have our nodes ignore you. So go to town. Go to town. We're not installing your software. And what did they do? They would fork themselves off onto a network that would be worth nothing, and we called their bluff. And it worked because we had fully validating nodes, because the network is actually decentralized, and that the process of validating and defining a sole sovereign node on the network is what makes this thing valuable to begin with. That is what defends the settlement assurances. That is what makes the cost of reversing a transaction permanent and impossible to get around. So even if you look at something like how many comps on Ethereum, which is only like 3 times slower or something like that, it doesn't matter because it doesn't come with any settlement assurances. We've already seen what happens when the network settles a transaction that the leaders of Ethereum don't like. They just fork and change the transactions. They just alter the history. They've already proven that they're not resilient against that and that they are explicitly centralized. And every time I try to have a conversation about like what the monetary policy on Ethereum is, everybody dodges. Nobody even knows. So the two most important things, the reason that cost is important is because the nodes defend it. The only reason the miners mine anything is because nodes won't accept it without a valid hash, without a valid proof of work. If everybody just stopped running nodes, well, then miners wouldn't care. Why would they care? Who's going to not accept their blocks if nobody's checking for the hash on the blocks? They're not doing it just for fun. They're doing it because the nodes require it as part of the consensus. The network will evict them if they don't perform the work. That is why it's secure. They are dependent on each other. There's actually, I really like Vlad's posted the shallow safety versus deep safety, which I'm not sure if I saw. I take that back. I probably did. I follow Nixavo and I probably just forgot that this thread existed. But this was a really cool thread that was posted right here in the middle, just about the idea of shallow versus deep safety. And this is an idea that we also talked about in what was the piece? It was pretty recently. I think it was the ARK Invest paper. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Bitcoin is a novel economic institution. They went into the shallow protection versus deep protection and really got into the weeds about how and why Bitcoin is actually the deepest protection that of any asset that exists. And that is one of the most profound things about it. And part of that is the monetary policy, is the clearly defined, predictable scarcity of the network. But then also it's the settlement assurances. It's the fact that it's absent of jurisdiction. There's no like handful of developers that could just arbitrarily change the rules. The entire consensus mechanism, the rules themselves, are defended by tens of thousands, well, nearly hundreds of thousands of nodes on the network distributed all over the world. They're not only geographically dispersed, but there's like a fourth of them now that are behind Tor, so they're geographically agnostic. They don't even, you can't even discern where they are in the world. So it's defended, and they keep, as long as you've got one, you know, you've just got a handful of these things and the network is up and running. You can still prove your ownership and you can still sync a node. So the only network that can actually survive a network level catastrophe of thousands of nodes going offline and actually recover is the one with the smallest blocks, with the most, that with the highest assurances, with the most nodes already available and most widely distributed. That's Bitcoin. It's about resilience. It's about independence, because the more of those characteristics, the more sure it is those things, the more sure you know you own it, no matter who in the world, where they are, what authority they are, what jurisdiction they are in, how much supposed political power they have. They can say nothing about whether or not you own it, because Bitcoin is the final settlement. Bitcoin is the arbiter of last resort. And not even gold or real estate can offer this level of protection, because they are explicitly dependent on their localities, on the jurisdiction that they exist in. And moving them is very difficult. Whereas Bitcoin exists everywhere at exactly the same time. All you need is 12 words. And you have Bitcoin whether you're in Venezuela, you're in Russia, whether it's midnight in Istanbul, or you're in rural China. Doesn't matter. You have the Bitcoin as long as you are the one with the keys. Period. Almost no shitcoin or altcoin out there can say that. And it's not a simple matter of, oh, look, our network is working right now when nobody's using it and it's not worth anything and it's not being attacked. It's explicitly about when it is, when something like that is happening. Do you actually care about the monetary policy? Because most of them don't. In fact, the vast majority of them don't even think about it as a money. They think this is a technology. This goes back into yesterday's episode of the Great Plague of Shitcoinery. They think that this, the mental framing for so much of this is that this is a technological revolution, and it's not. There is interesting technology being built, but it is a monetary revolution. And there is a fundamental misunderstanding going on in the rest of crypto. Maybe not everybody is falling victim to it, and maybe some of them realize or understand, or they think, you know, they've reframed it slightly differently in their minds, but 99.9% of at least the people I have talked to and conversed with do seem to fundamentally misunderstand the aspects and the nature of money, and see this as who can make the best gadgets the fastest, not who can make the highest assurance, independent, most secure money as possible. And that just means that by default, they're not going to last. And it sucks, you know. Tons of people are going to get burned. Tons of people will make money off the scams. But, you know, it's not as if, like so many people, like, oh, Bitcoin maximalists are just butthurt. It's like, I don't care. I would not care. In fact, it would actually be a whole lot better if all of these altcoins were going to succeed, because then I could buy them and make 10x or 100x. I'd have the ability to make more money if it were true that we were going to have hundreds of currencies, because then there would be a bunch of cheap ones that I could buy. It would be like getting back in. It would be like getting into Bitcoin back when it was just year two or three, when it was super cheap. It would be better if that were the case. But I'm not going to just believe it is so because it would be super convenient for me. What I know and understand about money screams that that is a terrible idea and that it's not going to work out like that. But you know, it's not a whole lot you can do about it. Everybody's in love with their investment, and you know, you get an argument or you get a position right when you get in, and sometimes you just stick with it, you know. It's still amazing to me how many won't even, like, read or begin to dig into or just don't even have any interest in learning about the history and origins of money and really the economics behind it. I mean, I still hear, you know, Keynesianism level arguments from a lot of people in quote unquote crypto. And that's aside from the whole lots of payments and it scales and look at my smart contracts and, you know, all that stuff. That's like just even throwing that aside, just like general economics, like somebody telling me that deflation is bad and that there should be like inflation or something like that. But then turn around and tell me that, you know, ETH is going to be even more sounder, even more scarce than Bitcoin because ETH 2.0 is right around the corner. But just, I'm not sure if anybody's heard or saw that thread. Or has been watching Marty Bent's thread on it that he like updates every once in a while. But there were, you know, like now it's like rollups are coming to Ethereum or something like that. I can't even remember what it is. They're doing basically some sort of smart contract second layer thing, similar to Lightning that is apparently going to be around soon. And then there's some sort of base. I still don't even quite understand what rollups are. The brief explanation I heard kind of sounds like channels, but I could be wrong, and the person who is trying to explain it to me could have not really known what they were talking about. But this is apparently like one step of like eight that is going to roll out ETH 2.0, which again is supposed to be proof of stake, from everything that I've heard, which is funny because Ethereum's the only thing that actually has some, the only decent thing that they've actually got is roughly decentralized mining, and they've got a decent mining industry. So they're going to kill the one thing that I actually think ETH has going for it, which is a little bit painful. But even now, like, so it was positioned as if ETH 2.0 is coming out at the end of this year, and this is after like 20 delays of like, oh, it's coming out in a few months, oh, it's coming out in 6 months, oh, it's definitely going to be here next year, oh, it's going to be at the end of 2020. And I've been hearing that pretty commonly, and maybe I misunderstood this, but it didn't seem like it from the, you know, Marty Bent's thread and all of these things, is that ETH 2 was supposed to really happen at the end of 2020, and now Vitalik has said, oh, no, 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 it's just like the first of many steps to ETH 2. We're still 2 to 3 years away of ETH 2.0. And I'm just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like it just, it's not going to happen. So they have the exact same problem of scalability that they claimed they didn't have for I don't know how long, until they're now getting slapped in the face with all these fees, and huge, huge fees, actually, because of this DeFi debacle where everybody's just rushing to get all these, you know, newly printed tokens as quick as they can before, you know, while they can still make millions of them and then dump them super fast, and then they die in a couple of weeks, and then there's the new one, and they turn right around and they cycle it back into the new one. And basically only the people who are in right at the very beginning actually make any money. But there's also the potential risk that, you know, 4 out of every 5 of them don't do anything, so you just lose money. It's like, how are you going to pick? Which one are you going to pick? The magic hype works. You know, and basically it's the whales, it's what they pick that makes other people go rushing into it. So it's like a game of picking which wealthy person is going to screw everybody on which new pointless project. It's really painful. We went into it in the Shitcoin Insider episode, which I guess I'll plug that again. I don't know how is that, it's just, I now keep just getting episodes talking about shitcoinery again. I promise I won't do this on tomorrow's episode, but so many things apply, and it's come back up again. I've had a couple of debates on Twitter, so it's like fresh in my mind. And of course, new podcasts, it's just been what I've been talking about recently. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I guess we'll close this out here. I don't think there was anything else I wanted to hit. Just a really great article though, and another awesome perspective on the, you know, your 1 minute, your 10 second confirmation is not faster than Bitcoin's 10 minute confirmation when it takes another 14 days to get even close to the amount of security that Bitcoin offers. And I love how it just kind of closes it. And Vlad's just like right at the end of this is just like, let's also just ignore side chains, Lightning, state chains, like all these other things. We're not even talking about, you know, Liquid and off-chain scaling solutions, because they destroy the whole thing. We're just talking about 10-minute settlement. And for anybody who's listened to this show for any amount of time, I use Lightning Network constantly. I used it today. I used it yesterday. I've used it practically every single day for months. I think at least since Strike has come out. And I've been using it to, I'm remodeling the closet right now. That's how I'm getting everything off of Lowe's, is I'm paying straight out of Strike to Fold and getting points back. Everything I buy on Amazon, my morning coffee every day. Like, no joke, I am using it constantly. And guess how long it takes to settle those transactions? They're immediate. They're immediate, and they have the level of assurances that Bitcoin offers me. I have a signed proof of reserve, confirmed tens of thousands of blocks ago, transaction with an insurance clause that I have a 2-day period to get it into blocks, and I'm fine. That is a settled transaction. That is an instantly settled transaction, and I use it all the time. So ignore everything about this entire article, and Lightning Network still makes your chain stupid. Okay. I hope you guys enjoyed that read. Huge thank you to Vlad for writing this, and for the Bitcoin Takeover podcast and website. Really a lot of great stuff to uncover out there. And Vlad's a fun one to follow on Twitter. So I will have the link to all of this in the show notes. You can find his Twitter handle at the Vlad, V-L-A-D, Kostia, C-O-S-T-E-A on Twitter. Again, links available, but just in case you're sitting at your computer right now and you just have to type it in and go follow him. Much love to Hexa Wallet for supporting this podcast and keeping Bitcoin Audible alive, and for making such a cool mobile wallet that I'm very excited about, and there's a bunch of new features coming. And of course, to my many beautiful, amazing, awesome patrons for just being avid listeners and lovers of this show and supporting what I do. It makes all the difference in the world, and I love having my own little group over there where we get to hang out. So thank you so much. And if you want to join us, that is patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy. Links to all of this actually on guyswan.com if you want to check that out. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could have a world with hundreds of monies, and we could all get rich 100 times over on a bunch of cheap, arbitrarily, barely faster block-timed coins? But it won't happen. We will have the most secure, decentralized, independent, global, sound digital money that exists. And it's pretty clear that the only thing that can sit on that throne is Bitcoin. And that is why I am here, and why this is Bitcoin Audible, and I'll catch you on the next one. Until then, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Cryptoeconomy Network.